You're listening to Food and Drink, a podcast brought to you by Business News Wales in partnership with Food and Drink Wales, Ambition North Wales and Mentera.
Hello and welcome to this Business News Wales Food and Drink podcast. I'm Gemma Casey, editor of Business News Wales, and in this episode we're going to be considering taking Welsh food and drink global. The potential rewards from international trade are significant, with many businesses already seeing benefits from taking part in trade visits and events facilitated by Welsh Government. With me to discuss the scale of the opportunity and the practical support available to businesses are Rhys Llewellyn, who manages the Welsh Government Food and Drink Export Cluster, Jack Davis, Head of Out-of-Home Sales at Hilltop, Anita Richards, International Trade Manager at Rachel's Organic, and Stuart McNally, Commercial and Operations Director at Callan Wen Organic. Hi all, thanks for joining me. Rhys, I'm going to start with you, and could you first of all paint a picture for us of the current scale of the Welsh food and drink export market?
The food and drink export market for Wales is pretty buoyant, to be fair. So it's worth about 820, 850 million per annum. It's increased significantly as well from 2019 to 2024. So it increased by over 40% in that period. Now, that's value. So some of that is due to food inflation and food price inflation, but there's still a significant increase there. The EU is still our biggest market despite Brexit. And then the Middle East and North Africa would follow quite a distance behind that, actually. Only a tenth of what we do to the EU goes to the Middle East. The main products that we export then would be what you'd expect, really, our PGI Welsh lamb, PGI Welsh beef, for example. Cereals and dairy follow quite closely behind those. Of course, products for primary production farms, which we've got plenty of in Wales.
You used the word buoyant there, Rhys, and you've certainly made it sound buoyant and really interesting that there's scale of growth as well at the moment. But do you ever come across objections, Rhys, from businesses who perhaps aren't exporting? And what are some of the barriers that they perceive to taking part in international trade?
Okay, there are some significant barriers that have slowed down international trade. Clearly, Brexit was a really big issue for a lot of food and drink businesses in Wales, especially the small to medium ones. Ones who didn't have maybe the subsidiary in the EU or didn't have the technical expertise or the resource necessary to do all the extra bureaucracy that was needed to gain access to the EU after Brexit. And that's really been a challenge for a large number of companies. Some have given up on it completely because of that. So that's the main one. Of course, we've had quite a lot of uncertainty in global markets as well. Things like the war in Ukraine, trouble in the Middle East. More recently, the issues around tariffs being introduced by countries, mainly the US, but then retaliatory tariffs being put in place by other countries. So all of these are challenges which make it increasingly difficult or challenging for companies to be able to export.
And tell us a little bit about the work of the Export Cluster and how you support businesses.
The Export Cluster, essentially, it's a helpline that's there. We provide a service. If people call us up going, okay, I know I've got a query on market access. Can I sell product X in country X? And we can do some research for them. And going, yes, you can. These are the rules that you need to abide by. These are labeling rules for that country. You need an export health certificate if you export something that's of animal origin, for example. Helping to find commodity codes for different products, which are the key element that you need for the paperwork. We also provide contacts in certain markets. We've built up quite a considerable number of contacts over the years, so we can put people in touch with wholesalers and distributors and to end users in markets. We can direct them to research as well. But also, we run a number of webinars during the year focused on different markets. So over the year, we've done a spotlight on Japan, we've done Singapore, we did Germany, Switzerland. We've got one coming up in the autumn on the Republic of Ireland as well. These are really set up to provide, I guess, a snapshot of the market, a little bit of information about the market. We usually try and engage with a retailer in the market and a distributor in the market, who then they can talk about the do's and don'ts exporting to that particular country, what they're looking for in that country, what products would go well there, any demographic information that would help businesses make the right choices about markets. We also provide training on the basics of export to companies who are new to it. What are the barriers they're going to be facing? What are the resource needs that they have? And then over and above that, we do have a sort of business support section where if the level of support exceeds what we would do through the helpline, we can provide more in-depth support to businesses who really need it. To give you an example, I helped a company recently to get all the paperwork to enable them to export to the USA. So it was just sitting down with them. They had all the information, but knowing what they needed to pull from where to put into the paperwork to make sure there were no barriers to their successful export.
And that sounds like an incredible resource, Rhys. Is this fully funded? Do businesses make a financial contribution?
The Export Cluster is free to join. It is by application that you can join the Export Cluster. And then once you're a member, all of those services are available, fully funded by the Welsh Government, as well as signpost support that is available from the Welsh Government.
Thank you, Rhys. Let's move on to hear from some of our food and drink producers from around Wales. Anita Richards from Rachel's Organic. First of all, tell us a little bit about that business. I know listeners will be familiar with the name, but tell us a bit about where you're based and the scale of the business.
Rachel's Dairy is based in Aberystwyth in Wales, and they've been producing organic yogurt and dessert for over 43 years. They were one of the very first certified organic dairy farms back in 1952. So it's Rachel's mother. She was the pioneer, the founder of the organic farm. And since that time, we've grown to be one of the largest organic dairy yogurt suppliers, now supplying globally as well.
And Anita, your role there is International Trade Manager. So tell us a little bit about the scale of exports for Rachel's.
Rachel's have been exporting for around 18 years now, and it's incredibly important to the dairy. It means we don't have to rely on the UK business, which can be very volatile, and it helps safeguard jobs at the dairy, and it's a very, very important part of our business.
And what are the key markets that you export to, Anita?
The key markets for us are the Middle East. That was our very first market back in 2007. I went to an international trade show in London where the Welsh Government had a presence. I went along to have a talk with them and they said, would you like us to introduce you to one of the largest retailers in the UAE? So I met with the retailer and they loved the brand. I went back and did a little bit of my own research and then I tapped into the resource from the Welsh Government and ITO. And they helped me with my research and then I went across to the Middle East, met with some key retail buyers and distributors, and our business has grown from strength to strength since 2007. And in that time, Rachel's is the number one imported premium organic yogurt, and we've held that position for 18 years, which is truly amazing. But it's a lot of hard work. There's no instant wins with export. That's what suppliers need to be aware of. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of market visits because they value, in the Middle East particularly, they do value those face-to-face meetings. If you have those face-to-face meetings, you build that relationship up and the business will just come.
Interesting. So you mentioned there how this relationship was born out of a trade show that you attended in London. Now, I know that Welsh Government facilitates lots of trade shows and events overseas as well as in this country. How important is it for a food and drink producer to attend those, in your opinion, Anita?
It's hugely important. One such event is the Gulf Food. It's the world's largest food and drink show. It truly is. And by having a presence there, you're not just appealing to the Middle East. It's an international show. Singapore, Hong Kong, China, buyers from across the world. And it also gives you the chance to network with like-minded suppliers, to see existing customers. Hugely important international trade shows. And Rachel's have been attending the Gulf Food for around about 15 years now. And it's a show, it's key on our calendar. It's a number one event that we always attend.
So you've mentioned that it is hard work to establish these relationships and then to nurture them. But in your view, Anita, does it pay dividends for the business? It's clearly worth doing.
Absolutely. I'm now in a situation where I'm dealing with sons and daughters of business owners who I originally met the parents, developed that relationship, got to know the family, and now the sons and daughters have come in and they've taken over the business. So we've got that deep-rooted relationship, not just on a business level, on a personal level as well.
Thank you, Anita. Stuart McNally from Callan Wen Organic, again, a household name, but tell us a little bit more about the business.
So we're a cooperative of 25 family-run farms. All the farms are organic and all the farms lie within Wales. We searched to have two milk fields, one in the northeast along the borders there, and then the southwest Wales, where I think we're very fortunate in Wales. All it does is rain and we can grow a lot of grass. And as we see the changing in climates, I think it's only bolstered our ability to produce really high quality, high welfare dairy in Britain and in terms of global standards as well. Callan Wen have been going for 25 years. This year is an anniversary, and we've been exporting since 2017.
So younger to export than Rachel's, then Stuart. How did you break into that? What was the driver for you?
The UK retail market is dominated by the big four, and if you add three more onto that, you're looking at 93% of the market's dominated by essentially seven retailers. Whereas internationally, there's opportunities in emerging markets. The growth levels in some of these emerging markets are double digit and has been for a number of years. And we just needed to, like Anita alluded to, it's spreading the risk and trying to find markets that aren't purely UK based and susceptible to UK pressures and fluctuations. And it was just to develop the sales and have a bit more of a wider spread of sales, basically.
And how did you go about embarking on that journey? Did you access the sort of support that Rhys has told us about?
Absolutely. It's not worth overstating that without Welsh government support, we would have never gotten into exporting. I know there are other UK-based organisations, such as DBT or DIT, whenever they call themselves these days. But certainly, I think in Wales, we seem to be quite blessed in terms of the support that's available. If you're prepared to go out and access that resource, it doesn't come to you. It's not laid out on a plate, but they help facilitate, signpost, and get you in the right direction, which we started on a trade mission initially and just went out to the UAE and looked at the market and looked at the retail. And at that point, I think many years ago, and everybody will allude to this, it was the land of milk and honey in those days. But as the professionalism of the retailers and the development of more retailers, it's definitely become far more competitive and probably a bit more similar to the UK in terms of how competitive it's become. But yeah, it was an opportunity ultimately.
And that first trade visit that you embarked on then, Stuart. So we heard a little bit at the top from Rhys about how businesses sometimes feel that this opportunity isn't for them for lots of reasons. What sort of mindset barriers or internal barriers did you have to overcome before you said, no, do you know what? This is worth doing. We are going to do it. We're going on that trade visit. We're going to explore it.
Yeah, I think rather than just tuning up and having your wander around in a different country, you've got to do your research, you've got to prepare well, and certainly whilst government various bodies will help you with that, and we certainly engaged, I think, in the very early days just before I started, where we had whilst government and Cardiff Met did a desktop exercise for us assessing markets, so we had a good idea of what the retail values were, what they were products were selling for, what the scale of the market was and the size of the opportunity. So I think doing that level of research before you go anywhere, rather than just hoping you can, and then equally the pitfalls, and everyone will probably come on to this, but the pitfalls of certain markets, certain ingredients and regulation, do you have alignments in terms of, say, for organic regulation being a particularly important one to us. So you really have to do your research first, or you could waste a lot of time and money visiting markets that potentially are even open to you.
Yes, let's come back to those pitfalls. But for the moment, I'd like to hear from Jack Davis, head of Out of home sales at Hilltop. And Jack, very fittingly, Stuart has mentioned the land of milk and honey. So we've heard from two dairies. Let's move on to talk about honey, but other products as well. Tell us a little bit more about Hilltop.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're based in Newtown in Mid Wales, and we've been growing since 2011. So we're currently the second largest honey brand in the UK, fastest growing brand in the UK. And yeah, over the last 15 years, we've been on this rapid growth, which has seen us grow in size in terms of factory space here in Newtown. We've recently moved into two new sites in Newtown, taking our capacity to up over 30,000 tons of honey a year. And what that efficiency in packing for the UK market has brought us is the opportunity to go after export opportunities globally, just by the efficiencies we've got in our factory now help us become that bit more competitive with people that we're trying to compete with on a global scale.
So tell us a little bit about those export opportunities for your products.
Like Anita and Stuart, we do a significant amount of business in the Middle East, across Dubai and Qatar and Saudi Arabia. But away from the Middle East, we do a good bit into the EU still. Even though Brexit has come with its own challenges, it seems to be picking up. We work with companies across Iceland, Sweden, and Ireland and Germany. And then most recently, a key target for us has been the USA. We've built a strong e-commerce model here in the UK with Amazon, and that's been recognized by Amazon. And we're currently working with them on expanding that into the US market.
We mentioned at the top the issue of tariffs in the USA, Jack. How has that played into that journey for you this year?
Yeah, timely, Mr. Trump and his tariffs. It's a barrier that we didn't see coming, but it's one that we've had to adapt. At the end of the day, it hits a consumer at the price reflected on shelf or online in this case. Is that just a little bit higher than we'd originally planned, I suppose? But yeah, it's the tariffs is a funny one. We do a good bit of own label work for Aldi America, and that's come, the tariffs came at quite a timely moment there. So we've navigated it all with the help of Welsh Food and Drink and the export cluster. Yeah, we've managed to navigate quite a few hurdles that we weren't expecting. But yeah, stock is currently on the water, coming to a shelf somewhere in Aldi America for Christmas. So yeah.
Oh, great. Great to hear. You mentioned there the support that you've had from some of the Welsh Government funded initiatives. Talk to us about what difference that has made to Hilltop.
It's been huge, in all honesty. I think Stuart touched upon it before. It's, you go to somewhere like Gulf Food in Dubai, and it's all lights and shiny and massive. And you think, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? And it's easy to we get quite lost in it all, really. So what we've done now, whenever we do commit to an export show, a trade show, it's not just that show in isolation. It's very much like a three-month plan building up to it, where one that we did for America, we did Summer Fancy Food in New York, and we did an international trade development with the export cluster, where they did a real in-depth research in the market for us, covered everything from key customers that would target key states where they might use honey more than others, labeling legislations that are different to the UK, trademarks, you name it, anything you could think of, this research covered it. And it basically gave us the information that we needed before, rather than go into the show and thinking, right, now I'm going to start my research whilst I'm at the show. We'd used that tool to be able to do all our research beforehand. So then when we were at the show, we were able to just maximize our time there, meeting potential distributors that were highlighted during the research, potential customers, rather than wasting your time going at distributors that wouldn't be interested or customers that you wouldn't have a hope in hell of landing. You're able to focus your time more on just maximize your returns, basically, because again, like Anita said, it's a tough slog doing the shows. It's a constant, you're on the road an awful lot. It's constant just building those relationships. They take a lot of time. But having that information from the ITD beforehand just helps speed things along that little bit more.
And the ITD being the International Trade Development support that you access. Yeah. Thank you, Jack. Nita, we've heard from Stuart and Jack there about some of the barriers and pitfalls. We've heard about how different markets might have different labelling requirements, or they might need proof of organic status or so on and so forth. Jack also mentioned trademarks. What sort of support have you found is on offer to guide the business with those sorts of things?
Rachel's would not be in this position without the support from the Welsh Government. Throughout our journey, export journey, they've been there every step of the way, and it's resources that I've tapped into over the years. There are barriers, and sometimes they just come out of the blue. You've agreed a business deal, it's in place, and then all of a sudden a new rule or regulation will be enforced, and you haven't been told about it, a freight forwarder hasn't been informed, and your shipment will be stopped at the port, and it's, oh my gosh. That happened 18 years ago, and that happened, say, 6 months ago. So it is frustrating, but I think as long as you're aware that these issues can and do occur, do not be put off from it. They're not regular, but they do occur, they do happen. And you just have to manage the situation, learn from it. You just have to have a strong, robust P&L and factor in potential additional costs. But it's so well worth it. My advice to suppliers is to go out and have a look. Don't be afraid. The markets are the new, the modernised. It's very much like dealing with a UK supplier. Go across and meet with them. Even if you go once, that's good. If you go twice, that's better. If you go, say, three times, then they will take you serious. They know you really want to do business.
That's a really, really good bit of advice there, Anita. Stuart, you were nodding away there. You clearly recognise some of what Anita was saying about those barriers and how they can sometimes catch you unawares. How has Callum Wen dealt with that sort of thing over the years?
I'd love to say that we preempted them and we saw them coming and we avoided all these pitfalls, but unfortunately, you bump into various issues and problems. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't cost you money. There are other times where it has. And I think it comes back to that preparation element that we've been certainly been caught out with going all the way through a process. And as Nita said, they might change a regulation on a particular ingredient or anything that remotely contained alcohol has been in the premises that contained alcohol. There's all sorts of pitfalls and issues, but I mean, it's just really about doing your homework, speaking to as many companies as you can that have been there and done it. And that said, we had an issue with the USA. You went a long way down the supply chain element of this, and literally at the last moment, we found out that the organic standards didn't align, and that with having a particular production method of milk that we couldn't export, and we spent a lot of time doing that. So we learned, and then that's not happened since. So every new market we go into, we'll spend a lot of time working with the trade teams in those markets as well, and getting as many people, distributors, wholesalers, consolidators, all to sort of help us with that journey. And certainly for us, the model that seems to work better for us, because we're not at scale, is UK-based consolidators. It's not as attractive, and you don't have as much control over the brand. However, the consolidators take away a lot of that risk. They're the ones responsible for importing the products and their health certificates and all the rest of it. Oh, we're well versed in doing that. It does remove a lot of the pitfalls potentially for people starting to export. It's not a bad place to start because you're supplying UK-based and it removes those actual logistics headaches, which are fundamentally all about detail and compliance.
Thank you, Stuart. Rhys, let's bring you back in. So we've heard there about some of the pitfalls or barriers or headaches, as Stuart just called them, but let's not put off any food and drink producers who might be listening, who are yet to embark on this. Talk to us about how the export cluster and indeed other elements of Welsh Government support is there to help with those kind of things we've just heard about.
When you talk about trying to discourage people to export, I think part of my work is to discourage people because they don't understand the amount of effort. People like Anita have put in years and years of hard work to get to where they are now. And that's not to be underestimated. But I think the support that's there from Welsh Government, yes, the helpline is there as a first stop. But also, you know, we've heard mention of trade development visits. this is where you can go into a market, very often around a trade show, but go and see the retailers, go and meet with some possible customers or potential customers. Then there's the attendance at the shows, so shows where you are completely supported. You know, you get your hand held by Welsh Government and their contractors to make sure that you make the most out of the opportunities that are presented to you at a trade show. There's also a fund called the Overseas Business Development Fund, which is a pot of money that enables up to half of your costs of attending a show where Welsh Government isn't there. So if Welsh Government haven't got a stand, but yet you really feel that it's important for your business to go there, then it can be funded. That's also available for people who just want to explore a market as well. It doesn't have to be linked to a trade show. We've also done some Inuit admissions as well, where we've brought buyers into Wales, because nothing sells Wales like Wales. You know, we brought in, I think it was about 9 different buyers from the EU in March. So they were from the red meat sector and from the dairy sector. And we took them to a number of different farms around Wales to meet the producers. And, you know, we were lucky. The weather was good. The daffodils were all out in March. It was fantastic. And people were you know, it sold it to them. It explained the whole, you know, sustainable production methods that we have here in Wales, which is really important, an important part of the story when they're looking to sell their products. And that was just made clear to them by visiting Wales. So that's a really important thing. Market research as well. And the guys have mentioned this already, where they've taken advantage of this. So for example, if you want to look at Australia as a market, you want to understand, okay, well, will my product suit this market? What competitors am I going to be facing in this market? Which channels should I be using? Who are my potential customers and end users? And all of this is available, funded by the Welsh Government. So, you know, all of these things are there to help you make the decisions, the right decisions about your business. But one thing I'd like to go back to really is to talk a little bit about the importance of getting a strategy for your export. Because I was delivering some training actually on Tuesday in Carmarthen to a number of people who were looking at exports. Some had some experience, some didn't. And what I was trying to get them away from was just responding to inquiries from export companies. Because first of all, there is a lot of fraud there. People do try and try it on with companies and say, oh, you know, send me some samples. And you know, try and lead them down the garden path to a certain extent. If you've got a strategy where you've decided which markets you're going to go after, that isn't an issue for you, because you can discount all of those random inquiries that you will get from attending trade shows. But also it means that whatever money you invest in developing your exports to that market, it's money well spent. It's not wasted. It's not spread too thinly. It's targeted. And that is the key, I would say, to being successful in exporting. Prioritizing your markets, prioritizing your customers, and sticking to your guns.
Thank you, Rhys.
Just following on from Rhys's point there, in the past, I've seen some food and drink suppliers attend every international trade show that's going. They might go to the Middle East, they might go to Singapore, they might go to Hong Kong, they might go to Australia. You have to be focused on one particular market, is what I would suggest. And put your focus and energy into that one market, grow and develop that market, and then use that as your model for other markets. It is a big challenge taking on export. And by having that strategy and being focused in one particular market, which is what Rachel's have done, and it's worked for us. So it's just to echo there what Rhys said, have a strategy, and I would say focus on one market initially. And you need to give that time. There's no quick wins in export. You know, you'll go out and have a meeting and they'll say, yeah, we love your product, we want it. And you come out and you think, oh, that was amazing. And But often they are just being polite to you and they won't say no. So you have to give it time. It can take years, sometimes not months, sometimes years. Be patient, but keep your focus on that market and it will happen as long as you put the time, energy and resource behind it. Rachel's, we're a great example for 18 years and we're still going strong and we're still the number one.
Thank you, Anita. Now, I'm conscious of time, so I'm going to ask each of you in turn for your one top tip, that the one thing you would say to a food and drink producer who might be listening to this, who perhaps is thinking of export and perhaps hasn't embarked on that yet. Stuart, I'll start with you. What would your top tip be?
Do your research. And use Welsh government to do your research before you embark on export. And it will put you in a knowledgeable position before you even step foot into that market.
Thank you. Jack?
It's a bit of an echo of what Stuart has just said, really. It's utilise the tools that are there from the export cluster. Like we've did the ITD with the export cluster for America, and we're now completing an overseas business development visit with the export cluster ready for us to go back to America in March. The guys in the cluster know it far better than we do. So just, yeah, lean on the cluster, lean on Welsh Food and Drink as much as you can, really, because they've got an awful lot of information they're ready to give.
Thank you. Anita?
Just to echo Stuart and Jack, use the resource available from the Welsh government. It's an incredible amount of support that's available and the support is tailored to meet your needs. Be patient and have a long-term strategy for exports. It's not quick. Just be prepared to wait and it hopefully will happen.
Thank you. And Rhys, the final word to you.
I'll just reiterate what I said earlier. Don't underestimate the resources that you need to put towards export. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a long burn. Be prepared for that.
Thank you all. There are some great messages there for our food and drink producers around Wales. So thank you to my guests, Rhys Llewellyn, Jack Davis, Anita Richards and Stuart McNally. And thank you for listening.